Hi, welcome to the ProPublica podcast. I'm Joaquin Sapien. This week, Mike Webb interviewed ProPublica reporter Sherry Fink, who just received the Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting. Last year, Sherry wrote a compelling story about the difficult decisions a group of New Orleans doctors made in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. The story was a collaboration with the New York Times Magazine and ran in August 2009. ProPublica Communications Director Mike Webb sat down and talked to Sherry on Thursday, April 15th.
Where were you when the Pulitzer Prizes were announced?
Fortunately, I had to be in New York this week, and I was in the newsroom at ProPublica, where so many people had worked so hard on this story, and we all were able to be there for the announcement.
Were you a little surprised?
I was shocked. I think I'm still a little shocked.
And what's the reaction been from your friends, from family, and from other journalists?
I think one of the most wonderful aspects of winning the Pulitzer Prize is the fact that so many people get in touch. And as I answer them, I realize how many people have played an important role in my life and development as a reporter. That's just a nice thing to be reminded of.
So I know that you've done several interviews, and many of those are with foreign media outlets. Can you tell us what were they asking you about?
There's been a lot of interest from other countries in the ProPublica model, in this new model of nonprofit journalism that adheres to the traditional standards of journalism. And I've heard from these reporters in other countries that the fact that a story from ProPublica was the recipient of a Pulitzer Prize is very encouraging to them to think about these models for their country, as the normal financial model for journalism has hit some difficult times. So there's been some interest from reporters in other countries who are looking to possibly join or create nonprofit journalism models in their countries.
Why don't we go back a little bit and talk about the story? And can you give us the 2-minute summary?
The story is a 13,000-word detailed narrative reconstruction of several days in the life of one hospital hit very hard by the impact of Hurricane Katrina. This was a hospital where power went out, running water went out, patients, doctors, nurses waited days for rescue. And under those conditions and the heat and the incredible stress, certain decisions were made about which patients would get on to those evacuation helicopters first, which ones would go last, and as some doctors described to me, which patients' deaths would be hastened. And so the story really tried to give readers a sense of what it was like to be in these conditions and how decisions that seem so shocking, you know, intentionally hastening a patient's death, which is not something that is supposed to occur, how that actually came about.
A lot of people have described the story as being about euthanasia, and I always felt that that wasn't really an accurate characterization of it. Do you agree?
Well, the story is about lots of things. It's about lots of things that have potentially a wider impact or importance. One thing it's about is medicine in a crisis, in a time of crisis. And that could happen anywhere in the U.S., anywhere in the world, really. We have possibilities of all sorts of natural disasters and human-made disasters that could throw our medical system, put extreme strains on our medical system. And this story really brings out what some of those vulnerabilities are. For one thing, for example, I learned that many hospitals around the country have a real vulnerability to losing their power, their electric power and their water. Another thing that the story is about is triage and the decision of how to deal with your resources when you're in a crisis. And one of the things I learned is it's not just about deciding who gets this and who doesn't get that. That's in some ways the easy part. You can come up with all sorts of ways to make that choice. But what's really important about triage is about trying to do the best for every individual that you can and the best for that group of individuals. And sometimes that's about going out and trying to get more resources so that you can help more people. And what you saw in this story was that after the initial shock and, you know, lack of preparedness wore off a couple days into this, the doctors themselves went out and tried to hotwire all the boats in the neighborhood and get more boats coming so that they could take more people out of the hospital. So that's another thing that could have wider resonance. And as you pointed out, end-of-life issues, what's appropriate care when people are getting closer to death, those are really hot-button issues even in normal times. And other issues that the story raised had to do with legal issues and what is appropriate in terms of should the legal system have a role to play when things that are potentially illegal take place, but in a time of real crisis. So all of those things are elements of what the story is about.
Why don't you give us a sense of how you first got started on this trail?
I think that I first heard about this story the way that most people did. I can't remember the first time, but there was quite a bit of news when accusations or allegations that there had been some sort of mercy killings at a hospital in New Orleans came out. And then, in fact, of course, a well-respected doctor and two well-respected nurses ended up getting arrested on accusations of murder. And so that, of course, piqued my interest, as it did of many people's. And what I really wanted to find out was, well, what actually happened there? I mean, even if mercy killing did not happen, why would those allegations come out? Things must have been so horrific. And what can we learn from that for future disasters? And I think why it interested me in particular or so much was that I had just finished writing a book about a war hospital in Bosnia called War Hospital, and the doctors had worked under siege for 3 years. So I was familiar with this kind of medicine in crisis. And then I had gone and volunteered in various disaster and conflict situations.
And when you first found out, did you have plans to, what were you planning to do with the story?
I think the first thing I did was go down, I went and approached the lawyer for Dr. Anna Poe, who had recently at that point been arrested and these accusations had been leveled against her. And I kind of conceived of a magazine article that would maybe be a profile of her or a story that was kind of focused mainly on her. And at the time, her attorney and I spoke, and the legal process, the criminal legal process, was still underway. And he did tell me about an event that I could attend, and I ended up going and got to meet a lot of people who knew her well and spoke to her character. And so that was my first foray into it. And then, you know, because she was choosing not to speak about those actual accusations that had been leveled against her on the advice of her attorney, I started to go further afield and speak to more and more people. And then I realized that there were more and more elements of this story to be looked at. And so it really broadened and became interested in the wider implications for future of disaster medicine and a lot of the aspects of what we could learn from the story.
People are always asking us about how the partnership process works. So can you tell us a little bit about how this story came together with the New York Times Magazine?
I think this is one of the wonderful things about having done this story while a staff reporter at ProPublica, because I had access to all of the resources that ProPublica has and then the New York Times Magazine resources together. It was a fantastic partnership. So on the ProPublica side, fantastic editors, Susan White, a senior editor here, did the initial, helped me with the initial shaping of the story and the draft. Elena Silverman, my main editor at the New York Times Magazine, she's also just a brilliant editor and went through many drafts and helped me strengthen it and shape it. And Steve Engelberg, our managing editor at ProPublica, who's just, again, I can't say enough about all of them being brilliant editors, worked with me on a daily basis to just keep adding clarity and meaning to the story. It is a complicated story, and how to tell it was a real challenge. So I would say having that, and then just many people, both at the Times Magazine and at ProPublica, including Paul Steiger, the editor-in-chief, read drafts and contributed to that editing process. And then, you know, the whole web team at ProPublica, Scott Klein and Krista Chelman Schmidt, who was the main web person, they spent many months thinking about additional elements that would add clarity to the story. They hired a graphic designer to design a schematic of the hospital so you can actually click through and get a sense of where the different events were happening and what the distances were when people had to, you know, take stairways to carry patients out and take them up to the rooftop to be evacuated by helicopters. So there was that. Then at the New York Times, there was this fantastic research department that did all the fact-checking as the story got closer to publication. Just brilliant researchers there that, just like I called back and went back to every person who was named in the story, made sure everything was accurate. And then they repeated that process and did it very well and just really checked all of the any kind of assertion or fact that was in there. And copy editing and the legal departments of both sides just going through and checking the story. And the stunning visual elements that photographer Paolo Pellegrin brought to the story, I think, really added, again, to the meaning and the clarity. I guess a story like this, you know, a Pulitzer goes to the person whose name is the writer, but then really people who are in journalism know that there's just a huge effort that goes into these things.
Well, one last question. I'm just kind of curious. What prompted you to make the transition from medicine to reporting?
Well, I had thought I was taking a year off after I finished my MD, my medical degree, to go over to Bosnia and look at the practice of medicine in wartime there. It was after the war, but I had been in touch with some medical students who, like myself, was a medical student at that time, but they were in Bosnia, and so their med school was, you know, doing war surgery. And at one point, while I was a student, they organized a conference in Bosnia, which I attended and just heard about their incredible experiences. So long story short, I went over, heard about that, ended up getting a fellowship to go over there and study that and write a book about it, and did some journalism training so that I felt like I could start to be able to do that kind of thing. And then it just totally changed the course of my life. I fell in love with writing and journalism, and it took me in a different direction.
Well, that was Sherry Fink. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Mike.
That was ProPublica Communications Director Mike Webb talking to reporter Sherry Fink about her Pulitzer Prize-winning article, The Deadly Choices at Memorial. Thanks for listening. To read Sherry's story, go to ProPublica.org. This podcast was produced by Sharona Coots and Brent Gardner-Smith. For ProPublica, I'm Joaquin Sapien.